Good morning, everyone. For those of you who are here for the first time, this is not an ordinary Sunday for us. At 11 o'clock, in lieu of the Festival of Light, which we usually have at that time in the service, we're going to have a celebration for a fact worth celebrating, which is that this corner of Palo Alto now belongs in perpetuity to God and Guru, because all debts are paid on this building, which has been a tremendous effort that we've been following for the last several years. So today we will celebrate and rededicate, and I'll tell you all about that when we get to that point. But even now, my mind is more attentive to what we've accomplished, and I'm not as old as Swami on his 80th birthday. On his 80th birthday, he sat down, he said, "You're going to have to indulge an old man while I reminisce," is what he said. So I'm not quite as old as him, but I'm a little bit in a reminiscent mood, because I feel like many of you have been part of this from the beginning. Others of you have had the karma to step in a little later. But all of the collective energy of a lot of people, many of them present, many of them have passed through the doors and gone on to other realities, either the astral world or other lives, other parts of their life. But nonetheless, something really beautiful has been done for God here. And I think it's time we should bask in that. I've been trying to work on a book. People ask me, how is it going? Hardly is the actual word for it. It's hardly going. But I'm trying to work on a book which is somewhere between a biography of Swami, a memoir of life at Ananda, the story of Ananda itself. It's basically all these years. I have a lot more to say about Swami's role and Swami Kriyananda's role. He's the founder of our community. For those of you who walked in for the first time, he passed away last April. That's his picture. A year ago, April. And I have all these notes, so I've been reliving what I call my childhood. I often tell people I grew up at Ananda, and they try to do the math. They can't really quite make that math work, but I grew up because I feel like my spiritual life and my life really began when I discovered the spiritual path. When David was reading discrimination as our quality of the week and talked about that all discrimination is around the fact of God. You sort things out by putting God at the center and then understanding how everything relates to your own higher consciousness, however you call that. And until I met Swamiji and came to Ananda, there was no center point of my life. And so it just went in any direction, like a slick piece of Teflon on ice. It moved, but it didn't have any purpose anywhere, because there was no fixed point. And of course, at least for me, that was an exceedingly unpleasant and insecure way to live. And the fact that I was smart and accomplished in other ways actually just made it worse, because nobody around me could understand why I didn't have this confident expectation of life. Whereas in fact, I was, the more successful I was at, forgive me, meaningless things, the more frightening it was to me that there would never be a center point. And when I came on the spiritual path, especially when I met Swamiji, it was like the anchor was there, and everything after that can be understood in terms of how does this serve discipleship, devotion, the Guru's work in the world, Swamiji's work that he's leading us into, all of these things. I never looked back. From that moment, I never looked back. Just looked forward with great expectation and excitement. And I've been going through lots of notes and files. I've gone through one decade of my files, or one piece of one decade of my files. And what is amazing to me, just amazing to me, is how stupid I was. How just completely, on one level, unconscious of so much. I didn't have a clue as to where we were really going, that I would be standing here like this. Well, that's not entirely honest, but that this would all manifest, I couldn't see it. But Swamiji always knew. And that's what I find when I read this, you know, 1970, 71, 68, he always knew. He always knew what Master wanted to have happen, and that he was going to move forward. At least he was going to dedicate his life to trying to pull that forward. Now, of course, Swamiji has told us of two previous incarnations in which he lived in a very similar role to Master in Master's previous lives. One when Master was William the Conqueror and Swami was his son Henry the First. And the other was when Master was Ferdinand the Saint and Swamiji was Alfonso, his son, Alfonso the Tenth in Spain. Both of those incarnations seem way off the beam from Yogananda and Kriyananda, but both of them play critical roles in the direction of the planet and also in the spiritual direction of the planet. In Spain, it was a conflict between the Moors and the Catholics, and they held the country of Spain for the Christian religion, which at that time was important. And in William's time, it was also a similar struggle. The Moors were not the problem. It was more the pagans. But just setting in motion the world as we know it. And in both cases, Master, as the first force, just burst out with this tremendous power and broke through. But then his life, one incarnation, wasn't enough to take all that had been brought and put it into order. And that's exactly what Swamiji has done. Master wanted schools and communities and broad-reaching application of his teachings. When you go back into the earlier writings of Yogananda, when you read the very early versions of the magazine he put out, it's filled with little projects, little businesses. They have a goat dairy. They have a papaya orchard. They're making carrot juice. And my favorite was that Master manufactured this little item that he called the Temple of Silence, which was a little headpiece like this with earplugs, you know, the precursor of the headphones that people wear, but a little thing like this with earplugs. And then this little thing came out, and then there was a white star that was right in front of you. So you could close your ears to meditate, and then you could stare into the star. I mean, he was innovative and creative and whimsical. That's the only word. How could he seriously present to people with this temple of silence? Having lived with Swami Kriyananda and have him come up with so many different ideas, we imported opals from Australia. He went to Australia in the 80s and he came back with bags full of opals that we were going to sell, and we were going to make all the money we needed to build the retreat. And I had a relative in the jewelry business, Harold. And so I was calling Harold and telling him, Harold, you know, we've got the opals now. He had a good sense of humor about this. I was a surrogate daughter to him. And when Swami bought his first jeweled bangle, Harold bought all the stones because he could buy them wholesale. And Harold was a good Jewish businessman. And he just to explain it, he said, my daughter's guru, she needs some jewels. Went all over and got all these jewels, and Swami's first bangle was from Harold. So we went the opals, and Harold said to me, you should never go into business selling something you love. He said, because you lose your discrimination as to whether anybody else will love it, is how he put it. So the opals didn't work so well. The greeting card line didn't really go over really big either, and I don't know. There's a whole lot of stories about it. But Swamiji was always in there moving. And even though there was all this stuff happening around us all the time, he saw exactly where we were going. And as he said to us at one point, he found that instead of inspiring people, it frightened them. Because we were just a small group of mostly ex-hippies living out in the woods together, sort of thinking that we dropped out of society forever and we were just going to get to have our little life. And Swamiji knew that we were out to set up this worldwide work and to lay the foundation for Dwapara Yuga. Self-realization has come to unite all religions. Don't think for a moment, I mean that self-realization church, this one or any other, but the principles upon which this life is built, God within. And the only purpose of life is to experience that, whatever way you do it, however you do it. And that, of course, changes everything. And Swamiji always saw it. And he always saw it in the same way. And I find the same story everywhere I look. And we were just... Now, this is where it is so much about the present and the past at the same time. We were just the fruit of the vine. We were branches on the vine. And that vine was Swamiji, and it was Master behind him, and Babaji behind Master, and all of the gurus just moving with this inexorable tide of spirituality responding to the sincere longing of the hearts of all. When we started this campaign to pay off this temple, the picture of Babaji that's above the filled-in puzzle, this puzzle had 40 pieces in it, 25,000 each for $1 million. And we put the last one in a couple of weeks ago. But the other symbol of this is the picture of Babaji, the ever-living Himalayan yogi. And his words were, I perceive potential saints in America and Europe waiting to be awakened. And that was the impetus for giving, for Lahiri Mahashaya having Kriya, for Sri Yukteswar being trained, for Yogananda coming to Sri Yukteswar, for Yogananda coming to America, for writing Autobiography of a Yogi, for Swami Kriyananda, for us. We're in a straight line. But he didn't say, I see a potential empire for the Himalayan yogis being built in America. He said, I see potential saints. And his words were waiting to be awakened. And whatever else it looks like, you know, and you have to meet somewhere. You have to have four walls. There's a lot of traffic out there. It's really hard to stand on the street. There's lots of rules in our country about where you can gather and what you could do. You have to have some structure. Also, when total strangers walk in, they need to be able to see something. It's too much to ask that people can understand if there's nothing to look at. So you have to have something. But it's all about potential saints waiting to be awakened. In 1986, in July of 86, when Swami Kriyananda suggested to David and I that maybe we would like to move to Palo Alto. And we were in the odd position of, this was at that time at Ananda, of actually having been trained for a job that we were assigned to. This was extremely unusual because we'd been traveling and teaching in the West for some years prior to that. So we'd really been doing the same thing. It was a big joke at Ananda that we might actually know how to do what we were being asked to do. It was so novel then. But at that time, the definition of Ananda was Ananda Village, which is our rural community. And in fact, there was no such thing as Ananda Village because all you had to say was Ananda because there was only one physical location. And there was actually a very serious discussion as to whether or not any outpost from that rural community was anything more than a way of finding the people who were supposed to live at the rural community. In other words, you just find them, and as soon as you find them, you send them up there, and that was that. And so even though we'd started a few urban centers like this, there was nothing planted. We had here East-West Bookshop in a smaller form, and we had a big house, and we had a one-room place where we held our services. But all of it was considered really just to be, quote, if anybody is really sincere, they'll just move to Ananda Village. And then David and I were given this assignment, and something about it didn't ring true to us, something about that model. And we just said to ourselves, to each other, and to our friends, there's got to be people whose karma is different than that. Otherwise, how will this vision of Master's world ever be fulfilled? And we completely closed down our life at Ananda Village. We gave the house we were living in, we repudiated ownership of it. We didn't leave any of our belongings there, and we never referred to Ananda Village as home, ever, after that, from the moment that we moved. Because if this is the assignment that God has given us, then we must do it with our whole heart. I cried for 2 years, I have to add. I didn't cry all the time. I only cried when Swami Kriyananda came to visit and then got in his car and drove back to Ananda Village. When he wasn't around, I was pretty fine, but I cried just before he came, a bit while he was there, and solidly afterwards. But then after 2 years of that cycle, I said to myself, if God has put you here, meaning this place, and you refuse to accept what God has given you and demand something else, do you think that something else will make you happy? And I realized there's no turning back. You can't just sort of think, oh, it was so nice there, I'll just go back to being there. Everything in heaven and earth has turned. and we have to deal with reality as it is right now. And I sank into this spot, and with all due respect, pretty soon this place began to seem normal to me. You know, it just seemed normal to have all that out there instead of beautiful nature. And now I don't even really think about it. In 1986 that year, David and I led the first pilgrimage to India. And we didn't move here till January of 87 because that was already in the works and we had to finish that. Usually at Ananda, you were told in the evening and you left in the morning. So having 6 months' notice and actually being trained for the job that you were going to do was just like a huge novelty for everyone. But after that, we knew that once we landed, we were not going to get away from here for a long time. We traveled through Europe for about 3 weeks. We went on a Divine Mother pilgrimage, actually. We went to Fatima and to Lourdes, to Avila. We went out to see where Therese Neumann lives, out in Bavaria, up there. And when we were on the trains in Europe, we talked to each other. What is this going to look like? And Swamiji had trained us well, because Swamiji did not ever train us to say, we want a church that looks like this, we want a community that looks like that. None of those things. He's trained us to think about what does it feel like and how does it serve spiritually. And so we just developed this picture in our mind, and we talked about a school, we talked about a community, the bookshop was already there, where would people live, how would they serve, what would the energy feel like? And we had a wonderful time just sort of picturing it growing before our eyes. And what was it based on? There are potential saints waiting to be awakened. There are potential devotees of this path just waiting for the chance to serve. And this is what our life has been about, and it's been glorious so far. Let's see if there's a whole bunch of other people who want to do exactly the same thing. Right at this time, Swami Kriyananda wrote the Festival of Light, which is the ritual that you all are so used to now because it's more than 25 years. He called us light bearers and he put us in costumes. Before this, we used to wear regular clothes when we stood up here. But then we had to start wearing white robes. Now these are blue. It was big, big changes for us. And on Christmas Eve, 1986, at the tiny chapel outside of Crystal Hermitage, Swamiji had a number of us light bearers there, including us because we were on our way to leave. And he did the Festival of Light. I believe it might even have been midnight on Christmas Eve. Now just imagine, you know, and he knew what he was doing. He knew that this was the beginning of a completely different reality for Ananda. The walls were down. The geography was over. It was just about potential saints wherever they were. And he was laying the pattern. You know, he was giving us the dignity of representing Master with more awareness of what we were doing. He was giving us the form, which is the Festival of Light, that we could come together every week and celebrate together the descent of these masters and the potential of our own realization. And he was planting that as deeply into our spirits as we were able to receive it. Not as deeply as he was able to give it, but as we were able to receive it. And the two of us, I remember sitting in that little chapel while Swami is just pouring this divine grace onto us. And after we walked out of there, we said to each other, that's what we're here for. That we're just here for one thing, which is we are to carry that feeling of divine inspiration as far as we can take it to as many as we can reach. Everything else is extra. So we think that the accomplishment is a building and all this money and all of these different things. Nah, really doesn't make any difference. It would be nothing. Except that the reason it's there is because the devotion of so many hearts. When I came in this morning, just walked in, and Joycey was lighting the candles, and Karen was singing here, and somebody was messing with the sound, and people were doing things outside. And I said to David, I said, look how many people own this building. And own it in the best possible way. This is my home. This is not even Ananda's home. This is my home. This is my spiritual life. And if it manifests in a physical form, the great benefit of that is then it's easier for the next potential saints to see it. And that's how Swami, when we were being sent here, and David went to Swamiji, and he said, Swamiji's leadership, totally. David said, sir, what would you like to see there? And of course, Swamiji knew David, and he knew who he was dealing with, so he answered this way, I don't know. He said, how would I know? He said, I'm not going to be there. He said, you'll be there. He said, go and feel and see what's happening, and then you come back and tell me. And that's how he's always operated. You come back and tell me. You feel it. Let the divine flow through you. But at the same time, here's the part, and this, just to even pretend that I'm talking about the scripture reading, which I actually am. At one point, someone wrote a book based on interviews of many people who'd been part of Ananda for a long time. And because if you're a storyteller, you play the crowd sometimes. Swamiji sometimes looks at some of the epics from India that are so old, and he says, you know, this was just inserted by the storyteller because it played well, and he added this and he added that. So because it played well, some people told these stories about how Swamiji gave them a certain assignment and then just, you know, threw them into the deep end and walked away. There were a couple of people who'd said it like that. And Swami read that book. He called them up on the phone. He said, I was always with you. And he was very strong about it. I never left you. My consciousness was always with you. And it wasn't really as if they didn't know. Physically, he had walked away, but he was always with us. He himself, I love this. He'll sit and he'll say, I've founded 9 communities and 4 schools and 6 retreats. And if you look at it in an external way, he very rarely gave us a directive here. Directly. Twice he told us that what we were about to do. Once we were thinking of doing something, and his comment about it was, I think we need that like we need a hole in the head, was what he said. I said, I think I'm picking up he doesn't like it, David. Are you getting the same feeling? You know? That was when we were going to start another retreat here when the expanding light was barely off the ground. He said, it'll just wipe it out if you start one here. You can't do that. It didn't work out anyway. We thought someone was giving us land when in truth they just wanted to sell it to us. But, and another time, we were going to dissolve the ashram before we had a community. He said, you can't do that. People have moved there to have a spiritual life. You can't take the ashram away until you have an alternative. Twice. Those are the only 2 things I really remember him saying to us. But he founded this community. Every single piece of this he did. Because we are branches of the vine. And if we try to act on our own, if we even for one moment start thinking, oh, I think I'll make this church. I think this would be great to be the minister of this church. Wow, I like this position. If any of that ever crossed our mind, or if we ever thought, aren't we hot stuff for what we did? And it's not difficult to avoid those thoughts, really simply, and you all know this, because what we've done is impossible. It's just no question. There's no logic to this. There's no wealthy patrons. There's just no logic. This is impossible. But it isn't impossible because when devotees gather together and when their values are what they're supposed to be, which is we need this because there are potential saints waiting to be awakened and we need to help them find us. Because that was the one thing that Swamiji said. He said, Master's teachings, this path of self-realization, are ideally suited for the Silicon Valley because people are intelligent and creative and scientific and they want something that's dynamic and makes sense. He said, raise the profile so that when people in this area start thinking spiritually, they'll see you. And when we were looking, as many of you know, for this church, we were in an office building on California Avenue on the 2nd floor of the office building. Nakula lived here at that time, and we started the search for a church. We had our little teams, and we were all doing these things, searching for the church. And we made this little donation box, and Nakula, who had building experience, made a little architectural model of this church. And it became our donation box, and we stuffed the money into it. We looked for churches all over the place, and most of them were in more country settings and so on. And then finally, this one came available. Our realtor knew the realtor who was handling this, and in a very short time, it came together like this. We looked at our donation box. It was this church. And it was literally this church, because Nakula had walked around and he'd seen this church and he said, oh, that's a really idyllic looking church. And he built his little box to look like this church. And then afterwards, we'd shown Swamiji one or two of the others that never came through in any case. When we called and said, because he knows this area, we told him this church. Oh, yes, he said, every time I've driven by that church, I thought, that's our church. Sir, you could have told us. Better to let your own divine intuition find it. Let God's take its course, because then, of course, we have the experience of tuning in and following and having the courage to listen and to come here. When we had this church, we'd been saving money for a while, so we did have some cash in the bank. It wasn't like the farm where we had absolutely nothing when we bought the farm. See, we've progressed to the point where we can buy expensive property with nothing. We had a little bit in the bank, but we didn't really have it. And we were a really feeble earning group, let's just put it that way. Very few among us had anything resembling a real career. So we got about three or four of us in the congregation who had actual real careers, and we had those people meet the realtor so that they could talk, you know, substantial business, and I own this and I do that and I write this software and I make these deals. And Santoshi carried a briefcase that had absolutely nothing in it but a picture of Master. And we walked around just kind of carrying off this image that, yeah, we can buy this, no problem. And it was like five times the monthly that we were paying, whatever it was. But we just knew God had given it to us. And God blessed that Catholic realtor. He was donating his time. He wasn't taking commission. He was just as happy to sell it to the first ones who came along. Just as a joke in this. This was 40 years at Catholic Church, and it was a little traumatic for them to give it up. There was a chiropractor on California Avenue, Curtis Turchin. And it was a bit of a tense time, so he saw a lot of us pretty often. You know, turns out the entire Catholic ownership of this church was also his patients. So he followed the whole deal by the tension in everybody's neck. As the Catholics had to let it go, and we had to have the courage to just go. But, you know, David was wonderful in it, and everybody trusted him, and he just knew we could afford it. And so we just didn't know how, but we just walked in, and we just did it. The first time I stood up here to speak, I was wearing a white robe. We had, we still had most of the Catholic stuff up there. We'd taken the crucifix down, but I stood here, and that first day, I'm not psychic, but there was a row of black-clad priests all on the back. They weren't actually physically there, but their spirits were there. And they were annoyed. What is that woman in white doing facing out, not speaking Latin, in our church? And I mean, I'm trying to give the service. I can feel them there, the spirits of all of them. I finally just sort of had to pause, and inwardly I said, you know, it's our church now, get over it. We're all on the same side. You just have to accept what's happened and just move on. You know? And they did. They faded away, and over time it really became ours. I never once, not in all these 20 years, have ever walked into this building without feeling in my heart, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, thank you, thank you. So much has been possible just by that. But why did that grace come? Because of all the potential saints waiting to be awakened who have been willing to give their heart to God first. And then, you know, whatever else is in your wallet, you give your heart first to God, and it's not so hard to give the money in your wallet after that. Even when there isn't a lot of money in your wallet, you just find a little more and pass it forward. And then miracles happen. And that's what we're really celebrating today. We're really celebrating the miracle of what God can do with us if we just put one foot in front of the other with an open and willing heart. When we actually, the day that we actually paid this off, that's what happened to me. It's really really hard to believe. You know, time goes by and you look behind you, and there's a trail of glory that you didn't even know how it got there. And it's just one heart at a time. And then God can do miracles through us.